Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Some recent tragedies now making headlines are raising questions about how to determine if someone is dangerous. From the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, to the fatal stabbing in the Winchester Public Library here in Massachusetts, people are coming forward saying that there were warning signs of impending danger, but no one really knew what to do. Some say better training of police officers could help. The Arlington Police Department was recently chosen as one of only a handful of law enforcement mental health learning sites in the United States. Joining us to talk about this is Arlington Police Chief Frederick Ryan. Hi, Chief.
Hi, Deborah.
So what does this selection of a law enforcement mental health learning site mean for Arlington?
Right. Well, we implemented our program around 2010, where we have a co-responding licensed clinician that responds in the field with police officers dealing with people in mental health crisis or substance use disorder crisis. And we've made a lot of mistakes since 2010. And we've learned a lot from implementing the program. So the Council on State Government and the Bureau of Justice Assistance has selected Arlington and a handful of others nationwide to help other law enforcement agencies implement similar programming.
So you'll basically train others how to do that program that you started in 2010, where you have a clinician go out and help police officers understand mental health issues. So it's not necessarily growing the program you already have. It's just taking it elsewhere.
Taking it elsewhere and serving as a model for other law enforcement agencies in the country.
You know, in the two examples we gave, and I asked you this, Chief, not to talk about those specific police departments, but to talk about the role police officers have in something like this. In Parkland, Florida, where we hear that people were calling the police with warnings about the gentleman, the school shooter in Parkland, and then, of course, the recent stabbing in Winchester, where we read that neighbors were calling police because they were concerned about that young man. Police are increasingly becoming the face of the folks who have to deal with mental health issues. So how do you deal with that as a department?
Yeah. Well, you know, when we implemented our program, we looked at the data, and a minimum of 10% of our calls for service had a mental health element to them. And many of them had sort of co-occurring disorders, both mental health and substance disorder. And you know, we recognize that if all we give our police officers is handcuffs, that's all they'll use. Mm. And so we implemented a co-responding clinician who literally responds in the field with police officers to calls involving mental health. Now, before our program, you know, a cop dealing with somebody in crisis had no other choice but to arrest them for some low-level crime to restore order. And, you know, he or she thought they were doing their job. That's sort of what the policy of the department was. And so we've really turned that on its head, and our arrests have gone down, and so has our crime rate. But, you know, now we're diverting people into the healthcare environment or, you know, we're connecting with their mental health providers once the situation is stabilized and you know, this whole notion of being tough on crime, right? That's easy. Criminalize everything, arrest everybody, and warehouse them in jails. That's simple work. Being smart on crime is difficult work, and that's what we're trying to do here. Is, you know, some of these low-level criminal acts that occur in every community in the Commonwealth, many of them have a mental health element to them. Mm-hmm. So can we be dealing with these situations more proactively, more effectively, and having a positive impact on the quality of life in our communities?
Is it difficult, though, and where do you draw the line? Because you do have to keep order, right? And you do have to say there are consequences. So is there a guiding principle here that you say to yourself, well, this is where we have to draw the line?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That's a timely question. You know, I serve as a co-chair of the Police Assisted Addiction Recovery Initiative, PARI, which is a national organization trying to change the conversation from arrest and incarceration around substance use disorders to one of prevention and education. But I still have to do my job as a police officer. And just this afternoon, as I was getting ready to come in for this interview, I witnessed a man nearly drive through the window of a Dunkin' Donuts in Arlington. And I approached him and conducted an investigation. And he was impaired by the consumption of opiates.
Really?
And in that instant, we arrested him. I mean, so you're right. There are certain situations where arrest and prosecution is the proper public policy and the proper response. But when we're dealing with crimes that don't compromise public safety, just, you know, low-end users supplying their habit, we've got to be smarter about the way we provide police services.
Hmm. You know, the White House held an opioid summit just last week, and this follows the Opioid Task Force. Governor Baker is a member of the White House Opioid Task Force, and the Trump administration has said it's taking several steps to deal with the epidemic, such as opening up more addiction treatment, the rules about who can go to treatment and things like that. Do you feel that there's enough action on the federal level?
I was happy that the administration declared it a public health state of emergency. I think that was long overdue. I do wish that additional resources were made available, particularly to those hardest hit areas of the country, West Virginia, Ohio. I have a lot of colleagues. You know, if this were some other public health epidemic, right, we'd be stockpiling the antidote that saves lives at every street corner, right? There are law enforcement agencies who have trouble getting the resources to buy nasal naloxone, and that's because of the stigma associated with addiction. And I think the stigma goes right to the highest levels of government, and that we need to be bringing a true sense of urgency to this issue and providing the resources that go with that sense of urgency.
Are we putting, though, too much burden on our criminal justice system because of our failing mental health system?
Well, short answer, yes. But I'm proud of, particularly in Massachusetts, the way that our municipal police chiefs have stepped up and taken on this responsibility. We sort of collectively rolled up our sleeves and said, we're not going to sit around and wait for the bodies to continue to turn up. We're going to exercise some leadership and reverse this trend in the Commonwealth. The Baker administration have been great partners with municipal police chiefs. And we're making a difference, and we're being recognized as national models.
I want to ask you just briefly about two proposals that fall into this category. One is safe injection sites, whether we should consider safe injection sites where people could use drugs under medical supervision to save lives. Good idea or not?
Well, you know, keep in mind that safe injection sites allow immunity for those using drugs in a safe injection site. That's basically all it does. And it's interesting that whenever the conversation about safe injection sites comes up, people, you know, the stigma kicks in. But I ask the question like this. Under the current state of the law, if somebody is using in a private home and they access 911 because somebody has become sick from an overdose or an unsterile needle, they're immune from prosecution.
Well, I mean, now we have fentanyl laws, and so that may throw a wrench into some of that, right?
It could, but follow the logic. Mm-hmm. So we allow and we grant immunity in an unsafe, unhealthy, unsterile environment. Yet when we move to have the conversation, now I'm not saying I've made up my mind about safe injection sites, but when we move to have the conversation about safe injection sites, people jump up and down. So why would we not at least discuss granting immunity in a safe, sterile, healthy environment when we allow it in an unsafe, unhealthy, unsterile environment?
Hmm. So that logic appeals to you.
It does. Mm.
Second, just briefly, because we're just about out of time, in terms of red flag legislation that we're talking about right now and guns after the Parkland shooting, and that would allow police to take away the guns of someone who's determined to be dangerous. Good idea or not?
Absolutely.
Good idea.
No question.
Okay. Frederick Ryan, Chief of Police in Arlington, Massachusetts, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.